to be a special case, actually, along this continuum from ideology to science, or from think of a continuum from ideology to knowledge. For Althusser, art is a special case in between, a space midway between the two. Althusser says if works of art do not simply replicate the dominant economic, political, moral, cultural ideas and values of a certain place in a certain stage of development, artistic practice still takes those determinants as its raw material, the very stuff out of which an artistic representation is to be constructed is a society's dominant beliefs and acts of social relations. We've seen this over, for the past 2 days, of taking the given raw material and making architecture out of that apparently negative material. Art gives form to the materials of ideology, but not in an epistemological sense, not in the sense of that science produces knowledge, but rather in a perceptual sense. The perceptual sense of producing an alienation or an effect or a defamiliarization or an effect of internal distancing of the ideology, of rendering the ideology visible to us. When Venturi gives us back again the strip, he's rendering the ideology of that culture visible to us. If ideologies naturalize representations, surreptitiously presenting conventions and disputable meanings as if they were inherent and normal and absolute, art, in contrast, presents, but in a perceptual field, and in phenomenal ways, the lived experience of a particular social formation at a given moment in history, but at a distance, so that these meanings and relations can thereby be called into question, or at least seen and felt for what they are. So ideology thus appears in aesthetic representation, but is distantiated, is distanced. Now, Savetis is interested, it seems to me, in architectural design, we've said, as itself a cognitive practice, a kind of production of knowledge that unmasks its own mechanisms of fabrication, that unmasks its own discursive categories and procedures by which it is constituted. And he's interested in exposing these mechanisms through architecture, and these are mechanisms that are indeed so fundamental that they normally go unthought. Savetti doesn't ever footnote Althusser, okay, but I still think Althusser's notion of art opens us up until Savetti's passage. Savetti recognizes that the same structure and same rhetorical operations that's the source of all the postmodern cliches is also inevitably the source of any meaning. Since there are no codes other than those which we have to subvert those that we have. Since it's impossible to get outside languages that are already known, criticism must be produced from within. Silvetti advocates this critical play in an existent language, but in Barthes' terms, to make it say something quite different from what it says. Criticism from within obliges us to perform a kind of intellectual and symbolic task of criticism. So we arrive at a crucial moment in the argument of the essay, whose theoretical force has to be underscored. This is Silvetti's claim. It is only at the end of a process of intellectual deciphering that we turn back to the original referent, beauty, the human body, proportions, etc., in order to sense the strength of the new effect, but now we accept the reference only after we've demythified it. This results in a denaturalization of the code that has been interrogated. Now, so the fundamental issue then on which Silvetti departs both from Agreste and Goldoni's and from Tafuri is the possibility of making architecture about architecture, participating and accepting the ideological limits, but exposing them and subverting them symbolically, not take to the streets, but through an intellectual practice. The beauty of shadows, the beauty of anamorphosis, of obliqueness, of fictions that make manifest the fact they are fictions. Ten years ago, when Val still lived in Cambridge teaching the course with Silvetti, Val was often fond of going around repeating the phrase, "The Song of the Sirens is a song about singing." And we were like, "Yeah, Val, who are you, the log lady?" He was referring, of course, to the sirens' promise to Odysseus that they knew all that comes to be on this earth, and that Odysseus, as it says, will go off knowing more things if he will only listen to their song. Val writes, "What then is the content of this song, which is the most beautiful song in the world, the song which promises great knowledge, the song, though, which is fatal if heard? The song of the sirens is a song about singing. Criticism from within is an architecture about architecture." Now, the beauty of shadows is suggestive in its theoretical proposals, but perhaps I can just end by, at this point, by pointing, just maybe it would be a little fruitful to look at, briefly, at examples within actual design production of Silvetti and Machado that are contemporaneous and coming just after this essay, where similar concerns have been elaborated, perhaps most especially in the Fountain House of 1975 on your left, which is a paradigm of the kind of polysemic and sort of heterotopic references with, you know, the strip window, then the arches on top, and then the interpenetration of landscape elements within the building itself. This complete heterotopia of references, or the piece of furniture which is entitled L.A. Borghese, referring to not only to the Borghese family but also now Los Angeles, which embodies in the kind of seamless configuration the contradictory images of the mass cultural excesses of Los Angeles and the aristocracy of Napoleonic Rome, but the aristocracy of Napoleonic Rome made fashionable in the Paris of the 20s. Instead of all this, it may be too small for you to see the various, the wing that's a reference to L.A., and then the chaise itself, and then the classical scroll at the very end, and all this in the perspective filtered through a kind of Parisian boudoir of the 20s. These projects appropriate the signs from everyday life of the city, from private interiors, from objects of daily use, as well as images, motifs, and spatial organizations from the elite architectural canon. But at the same time, these signs and objects and organizations are transformed by this radical juxtaposition of remote and sometimes antithetical extremes. So the architecture seems to emerge out of this necessarily unresolved contradiction between the now unleashed dreams and fantasies of a selecting, designing subject. It's a kind of return of the subject and the fantasies of the designing subject, but now dialectically related to the demands of the architectural material. And by material, here I understand not only the stuff out of which a building is made, but also material as the disciplinary conventions and structures of the medium of architecture, and also the material in the sense of cultural determinants. There seems to be this dialectic relationship between the medium and the facts that's given, and the responsibilities and selections and even fantasies and dreams of the designing subject. This can be made maybe a little clearer in the project for just the folly, where you can see that the plan, actually, I won't be able to go through this completely, but the plan is appropriated from one of Machado and Silvetti's own works. You see but it's extruded up differently. And what I want you to sort of feel somehow is the force of the combination of appropriated things like the lifeguard stair, the trampoline now turned into sunbathing terraces, the juxtaposition of the swimming pool But then somehow, by manipulating it within with the very materials, I mean, it's a close attention to laying up a brick and the classical rhetorical devices of bricklaying, the classical Roman way of laying a brick. But what it produces, the overall effect, is to begin to produce this kind of anamorphosis that Silvetti talks about in The Beauty of Shadows. It produces a kind of surreal effect, not only through the combination of appropriated elements, but actually now through that the building itself becomes a kind of monster, a kind of, on the one side, a cyclops with the eye and the eyebrow, and then on the other, it's a two-headed monster looking out with one eye from one piece and with two eyes and a nose. The production of surreal effects, but within, I mean, the actual material and actual classical devices of bricklaying. Or a project that Machado did in the studio at RISD, an intervention for City and Estate, which I'm showing you only a piece of, first taking a kind of basilica shape, but then stretching it into something that's not quite a tower, but almost a tower, and producing this kind of attenuation, and then capping the whole thing off with a field of wheat on top. So it's not only the typological distress of the project, but the production of actual phenomenal surreal effects, surreal effects within the architecture. And what must be emphasized is this: what I'm trying to read this as is a symbolic refusal of reality, a symbolic refusal of reality as it exists, in order to produce a kind of surreality, an alternative reality, but out of the very materials of architecture. What must be emphasized is that if Machado and Silvetti's kind of surrealism recognizes the constraints of a present, recognizes the constraints of a discipline, recognizes even the constraints of the material building, their dissatisfaction with present reality is a symbolic refusal of the status quo. It's an attempt to return contemporary architecture, I think, to its social engagements by articulating new ways of seeing, new ways of thinking, new ways of practicing, figured in architectural form, and albeit at a symbolic level, but still refusing a kind of reality and producing a kind of surrealism. Now, surrealism, thickness of signs, inversions and variations of thematic motif, complexity of composition, singing about singing, these are all, of course, the qualities of the modern technique of montage. And indeed, the montage in Silvetti and in Machado's montage would be the dominant technique. Their work has more in common, I think, with its modernist predecessors who invented, let's say, montage, in particular the perceptions of surrealism, than it does with the indiscriminate accumulation of sometimes referential forms of American postmodernism. But now, Adorno has already pointed out that the surrealist project is ultimately inadequate. And its inadequacy lies the inadequacy of the surrealist project, according to Adorno, lies in its affirmation of the irrational, the dreamlike, its affirmation, its undialectical affirmation of what is immediately given, whether by the author's dreams and fantasies is just immediately given, or given by present society. So in surrealism, according to Adorno, these anarchic fantasies converge toward the kind of opposite tendency of just duplicating the individual or just duplicating the status quo. But herein, too, lies the terms of the distinction between modernist surrealism and what Machado and Saavedra call unprecedented realism. For if Machado and Saavedra share surrealism's notion of sort of liberating the authorial desire, the return of the author, the return of the individual, they equally insist on the functionalization and the materialization of these fantasies and dreams and images. So in this project for Palermo, which arise out of, I don't have time to analyze it completely, but it derives from the existing structure of the old city of Palermo, which is up here, brings out on the main highway, which is an extension of the Cardo and Decumanus of the original city, but then brings out this modern highway and actually turns the highway up in, well, there's another part of it that rationalizes and architecturalizes this cloverleaf, which I won't show you, but it's a kind of production instead of producing a classical gate piece, they accept the infrastructure, the cloverleaf of infrastructure, but actually try to make it into this enormous room which sort of functions as a kind of foyer. And then this this tower, which is itself just a turning up of the street, and the proposal is that this is a sort of yellow lit slot, and that the black asphalt would turn up into black stone, and the thinness of that street surface, really, that's just turned up and topped, and then the tower behind is left completely open. This kind of architecturalization of the infrastructure is what, to me, prevents Machado and Saavedra's what they call criticism from within or unprecedented realism from falling into the surrealist critique made by Adorno through this sort of materialization of the fantasies, the materialization and the functionalization of the dreams. And so this materialist grounding is what prevents it, that the surrealism too often suspends, is what makes the architecture somehow achieve this dialectical position. So in this architecture, the object appears as this interconnection between two distinct realities: the world which is, and which is given even in very functional terms, the distinction between the world that is and a world that might be. The object is transformed such that the very details of its surface and spatial configurations appear in changing and contradictory images, loosening themes, defamiliarizing familiar things in the world, and installing a perception of a possible different world at a symbolic level, at a perceptual level, architecturalizing this criticism from within the discipline, actualizing authorial desire, even a libidinal kind of desire, is intended to stand against this critically dysfunctional notion of Tafuri's l'architecture dans la boudoir, an architecture that only sort of spins out itself but without producing any effect, any social effect. Perhaps Adorno's notion of an exact fantasy is what we might use to capture what I'm trying to say. An exact fantasy of reality, Adorno says, a fantasy which abides within the material presented to it, given to it by culture, but reaches beyond them only in the smallest aspects of their arrangements, aspects that fantasy itself has to generate. Or so this kind of exact fantasy. Or perhaps an even more appropriate terminology would be to name what I'm trying to get at in their work, could be derived from the slogan imaginez l'impossible, sorry Julian, I'll do it in English, imagine the impossible, which was popular in Paris in 68 when Machado attended the seminars of Barthes. So imagine the impossible through architecture. Now, given given the explicit concern with architectural scenes and images, given the explicit concern with a symbolic language, not a real material language, perhaps it will seem surprising to claim a kind of, even a sort of proto-politics for that's calling for, what I'm claiming for this work is it's a kind of proto-politics calling for a transformation of society, albeit symbolically. But if unprecedented realism is understood not as the proposed production of some utopian spaces against all practical economic and social obstacles, this was the alleged failure of modernism, the proposed production of utopian spaces, if it's understood not in this way, but understood as the actual production of the concept of such spaces, that's Althusser again, the actual production of the concept of such spaces, then it becomes possible to speculate that such architectural projects might be grasped as properly utopian figures in a kind of anticipatory sense, that they're anticipating a space beyond this one, a reality beyond this one that might be transformed beginning symbolically. And this notion of unprecedented realism or criticism from within is an effort to produce this, exact fantasy, to produce this symbolic transformation, to produce this imagination of the impossible. Thank you.